And our next guest is Margaret Roach, a celebrated writer and blogger. In December of 2007, after a 30-year career writing for newspapers and magazines, Margaret made the sudden life-changing decision. She walked away from her high-powered job as editorial director of Martha Stewart Omnimedia, and she did what many of us dream of, retreated to her weekend home in Columbia County, to a life of peace, creativity and solitude. And there she focused on her passion, working in the garden. 3 years later, she's the acclaimed author of a celebrated gardening blog, awaytogarden.com, which was called the best garden blog by the New York Times. And she's just come out with a memoir called And I Shall Have Some Peace There, Trading in the Fast Lane for My Own Dirt Road. The memoir has received some wonderful reviews. The Kirkus Review said it was a moving, eloquent and joyously idiosyncratic memoir. People magazine said her writing is witty, elegant, proof that despite her seemingly perfect fast lane life, she was indeed meant for more artistic pursuits. Margaret, thank you so much for being with us here today.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? Okay.
Nice to be reconnected.
Yes, indeed. It's been a while. Yes. Yes, I knew you in your high power days. First of all, congratulations on these great reviews.
Oh, thank you very much.
And secondly, I love the title, which for our listeners is a line from a poem called The Lake Isle of Innisfree, by William Butler Yeats, whom, incidentally, you can hear read this poem in person at the Poetry Project website. And so, Margaret, just tell us why you chose that as the title.
I was actually surprised that the publisher, you know, that when it came time to pick a title, I had a couple of ideas, but this was my favorite idea, because this poem had... In my not very illustrious college career many years ago, when I was all of about 21 years old, I had taken one course that did stick with me among all the others that didn't, and that was modern English and American modern British and American poetry. And Yeats was one of the poets that we read, and the Lake Isle of Innisfree, which was written when he was young, it just stuck with me. It really spoke to me, where he spoke about, I mean, the rest of this line is, and I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow. And he talks about living in a bee-loud glade and planting rows of beans. And, you know, his dream was to go out onto this little island in the middle of the lake and have this idyllic life. And I don't know, it just, the image of it stuck with me all those years. And so I threw that out as a possibility, and I was surprised. But I love it. I mean, I love it. I'm happy that it's the title.
Right, and I think it perfectly sums up the book. I mean, I haven't read the whole thing. I've read a couple of chapters, and there are some sections that I particularly love, which I'd just like to read a couple of paragraphs of. To be a gardener is to come face to face with powerlessness. Not a word written anywhere in the corporate mission statements of Martha or my two previous employers. And to cultivate patience as actively as you do botanicals. In spite of following all the directions gleaned from Grandma and from garden books, despite considerable years of hands-on experiments and personal access to some of the most knowledgeable masters of the breed, I know only one thing for certain about gardening now, 30 years in. Things will die. Oh, and usually they will do so just when they're really starting to look good. After heroic measures of love and many dollars spent, after you have grown very attached. So, Margaret, just...
yeah, they do, don't they? Especially after a winter like this one.
So, just describe the memoir a little bit.
Well, I initially called it my dropout memoir, because it came out of my decision to leave my career and leave the city to finally live in the rural garden in a town of 300 that I'd been making for 22 years, you know, the part-time, you know, coming back and forth, and then breaking my heart every Sunday night or Monday morning when I would go back and leave my beloved garden again, and the excitement of coming back to see it on Friday. So I called the book my dropout memoir because it's about when I finally decided to live here full-time. But I think it's a story about somebody who has to try to figure out when she does that, besides figure out how to get health insurance and and how to pare down so that you can afford to live and so on and so forth. She has to figure out this kind of identity crisis of who am I if I'm not M. Roach at MarthaStewart.com anymore, because we've all become, and you know, the esteem and self.
Yeah, we are what we do.
It really has. I think that really is the sort of 20th century, or especially the last the technological age. I mean, we are what we're able to accomplish with the 24/7, 365 incarnation of our abilities, you know, and to be available and perform and produce. And so who am I if I'm not that? And I really didn't know exactly what would happen. I just knew I needed to be here in the garden. And so in those first months, I really pondered it a lot. And what happened was, and what the story is about, I live mostly in solitude. I don't spend a lot of time with a lot of other people in this new life of mine. And so there weren't a lot of characters to have in the book. But what happened is that these kind of guides appeared, and it was as if something was being enacted out the window for me. It was as if someone was putting on a play, nature was putting on a play, and the forces of the weather and so forth putting on a play to say, here's the messages, Margaret, can you decode them? So it's really amusing and a contemplation on, can you figure out who you are if you're not that former person that you were, and if you're more sitting still. And so I wasn't dropping out, it turned out. I was sort of dropping in to figuring out who I was, more stripped down and simpler and quieter, and animals and the weather and the house itself that I live in, the little house that I live in, are characters in the book, and the Wi-Fi radio with voices, you know, songs, one-liners from songs coming out of the radio, and I would think, oh, that's a message. It must be telling me something. Oh, that's right. I need to do, that's right. That's the answer, because I was kind of lost. I mean, so it's a funny book. It's a nature, very, very laden with nature. I think it's a tender book, and I think it's pretty frank. I mean, it was written in real time, so I wasn't censoring, you know. I mean, I wasn't censoring. I didn't have the ability to filter, I don't think, at that
time.
So, yeah.
Yes, you got a glowing report here from Martha as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's funny, I was afraid that she would hate it, because, of course, my decision to come here full-time meant a separation from her employ and our, you know, more everyday relationship. And, you know, I didn't know whether that would be a rift or what.
Right, because you had worked with her for how long?
15 years.
Oh, wow, yeah. And also, you were there during that time when she was in jail.
Sure, all the hard times. I mean, sure, yeah.
The stock prices were plunging and advertisers were leaving.
And then the good times, too, when we went, you know, built up the company, went public, when there were hard times, when we rebuilt after that. So, yeah, but, you know, it was really... it was time for me to go, because I had always really dreamed in some part of my heart of living in more connection with nature. And I had expressed that and tried to satisfy it with my gardening spirit, with my weekend gardening pursuits, with my love of plants and my reading plant books all the time and so forth. But it just wasn't enough. You know, I really needed to be here. And so it took a lot of changes to get here, but I'm here now, and we'll see how we go.
Well, one of the first things you did was start this blog, awaytogarden.com, which I think is wonderful, because it's so sort of interactive and you have so many different elements in it. And you sort of at this point have several blogs going, don't you? You have one for your book and and also for the sister project.
Yes, and that's with three other women, and that I'm not as active as I was in the first 2 years, just by the fact of my having the book now and having all this to do. I've stepped a little bit away from that, but yes, I do have a site for the book as well, because what I found by writing the book is that I have interests to express that don't really fit in the garden blog, and I have a community of people, some of whom, a good-sized community of people who come to the garden blog, some of whom are interested in this sort of aspect that's expressed in the book, an aspect of sort of searching and of spirituality, of connection to nature as opposed to horticulture, you know, kind of a little magic. So I'm not going to shove that in front of the faces of all the people on the garden blog quite so heavily as much as sort of say, hey, by the way, it's over here if you wish to come visit this too. So it gives me an outlet for my thoughts that have evolved since writing the book. But yeah, the garden blog was my first baby because I didn't know what to do, and I knew a lot about gardening. I live in a garden. I can take pictures of the garden. So I just kind of started it to keep myself from ruminating too much. And then it just kind of, as they say, grew like Topsy.
Yeah, I've been following your daily missives about the spring and everything, and all the little cartoons. And you said that your garden blog was getting gigantic just recently.
For me it is. I mean, for a blog it is, and for one person with no help it is, yes. It is. It's in the many, many tens of thousands of people come every month now. You know, in the beginning it was a couple, you know, first you have a few thousand, and maybe you're lucky, you reach 10,000. Well, now it's in the many, many, many tens of thousands. And I think that, you know, it isn't even spring yet.
Mm-hmm.
So typically my March, by end of March through, say, the end of June is when it really grows another 50% to or more just seasonally. So it promises to be kind of bigger than ever. And it's grown a lot because of the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's grown a lot. You know, just what happens is also there's over 800 articles on it now because I've been doing it for a while. There's several thousand photographs. So what happens is you also get that sort of mass that brings in searchers, people searching for a plant, you know, and they find me, you know, and then they go, oh, look, this is a good place, you know. So that happens once you get sort of a critical mass of goodies.
Yes, it's sort of become like a reference blog.
It is. It's really become more of like a website. I mean, it's got lots and lots and lots of stuff. So that's fun, and it keeps me, you know, off the streets, off the dirt road.
Yeah. Is there anything that you miss about your previous life or about living in New York?
I miss my two closest friends, one of whom was four houses away from me where I lived in the Bronx. And for many years, and so we used to be able to eat supper together, and he's my garden mentor as well. So that is, you know, moving away from your close friend and neighbor, that's hard. And then I miss my best female friend as well. So, you know, that really is, if I could transport them here, my life would be perfect, because my genetic family, such as we are, there's only three other people in my family, live in only an hour from here, so I'm actually closer to them than I was when I was in the city.
Right, because writing sort of came naturally to you, because you come from a family of journalists.
I do,
right?
Everybody, my sister, my parents, yes. Mm-hmm. So it is, it has come naturally to me. And I'm never happier than when I'm writing. I'm not a tortured writer. I'm not a writer who fights with it and loathes it. I never write a word until I'm ready to write all the words, and then they come flying out. So I tend to write a very large amount in a very short time, but I can't write one word until I'm ready. So I scare everybody because they think I'm going to miss the deadline, and then I'm actually early on the deadline.
Well, if you're like me, I can only write to a deadline. Somebody's actually got to give me a time that it's got to be done by, otherwise, you know.
Yeah, I suppose, that's
procrastination
true.
Rules.
Yeah. Well, I think with this one, though, it was more, because it was a rumination of what I was going through at the time, it was a little bit like a catharsis as well. So it had its own deadline, was that I was trying to find out the answer. You know, so.
What, if anything, did you learn from Martha that you use in your life now?
Oh, my goodness, so many things. Well, her expression, and it comes up in the book a lot because I think about it a lot. She had this expression, learn something new every day. And she would say that to us at the office. It was like the corporate, it wasn't our mission statement, but it was something she repeated a lot in corporate meetings and correspondence and so forth. Learn something new every day. And that's really important because your curiosity is, you know, your hunger for information and new ideas. I mean, that fuels creativity. So for me, I wanted to come up here and I wanted to write again finally after being a manager and, you know, managing money and meetings and people for so long and not writing. So learn something new every day, you know, provokes a lot of experiences that provoke some good writing, I think. And then I think also, I mean, really, it was her teaching that was part of the reason that I ended up leaving her employ, in the sense that she always said that if you can dream it, you can do it. I mean, she didn't say it quite so silly as that, but, you know, that kind of intention,
mm-hmm.
that there's no limitation. So she was the kind of person that, oh, you have an idea for a whole new magazine or book? Yeah, let's do it. You know, she was a believer, and, you know, she's a very expansive thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically when I knew that I needed to write again, I knew I needed to live in my garden, there wasn't really a way that she could say, oh, no, that's a terrible idea, you know, personal growth is a terrible idea, because, of course, she's a person who's all about that, right?
Right.
You know, so... Yeah, so those are two of the things. And, I mean, I've learned a million other things, but those are two important things, especially learn something new every day.
What's been the biggest challenge in your new life?
The weather.
Okay.
The weather is pretty ferocious sometimes, isn't it?
Certainly is.
Yeah. You know, but it's been great for me to learn patience and to become a more efficient snow shoveler. But I would say, let's see, the practicalities, you know, I had worked 32, 33 years in corporate jobs where I had a paycheck, I had benefits, I had a human resource department if I had a question, I had a tech department if I had, you know what I mean, I was an employee of corporations. Being without infrastructure is, after that long of having infrastructure, is really a little shocking. And at first, especially, it was like, well, who do I ask about where to buy health insurance? Well, how do I know if I'm getting an okay deal or if there's a better deal? Well, how do I get, like, technology help? Like, what am I going to do over here? Because it's not like someone's going to come to my house and help me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was, those things were pretty daunting at first, but I was really lucky. The Chamber of Commerce in my county is fantastic and welcomes self-employed people such as myself to join and partake of benefits. And, you know, I found through networking, mostly on Twitter, I found, oddly enough, here I am sitting in Nowersville, networking on Twitter, and got told to go to my Chamber of Commerce for help. So, so you know, like the crazy new world helped me in the sort of old-fashioned world that I live in now. So, yeah, it was logistics. It's finances. It's making a new budget that's harshly, harshly cut back from before so that I have a chance of supporting myself now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I do freelance and I do consulting and I do teaching in the garden. I teach workshops in the season. And I do the books. You know, I'm writing another book. And, you know, so I'm piecing it together. And so it's that kind of stuff. It's not I'm not lonely. I'm not bored. I'm not anything. I'm thrilled to be here. But the logistics, you know, sometimes you need help and it's, you're kind of remote.
Right.
And you're on your own.
Right.
So.
You give tours of your garden.
I do. I do. I don't have so many of them booked this year because it's a big year for me to renovate. It's 25 years old, the garden, and I've been open for 13 consecutive years to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be a big spring of cutbacks. And that's, you know, kind of like what I've been doing with my own life the last 3 years. I'm now going to apply in a strict way to the garden. I'm going to get harsh with it and really pare it down.
Hmm.
So, you know, I've learned the garden teaches me, and then I teach the garden. You know, we're sort of swapping lessons.
Yeah, so you're entering yet another phase.
Yes, which is good because the intimate relationship with the garden, the activities out there, always inform my writing and always stimulate me creatively. So I'm expecting that this hard work ahead, the snow ever melts, will be very provocative stuff for me. Yeah, so it's exciting.
Was there anything that you learned about yourself that you didn't know before?
You know, I wherever you go, there you are. One of the Buddhist nuns, Pema Chodron, says, I believe. Maybe is that who she says that, or is that John Kabat-Zinn? I can't remember. But anyway, I think it's John Kabat-Zinn. But wherever you go, there you are is really true. I came here to Nowheresville, to quiet and solitude, as much of a type A crazy person as I was in my old life. My old life didn't make me a type A person, or triple A, really. I just am. So I'm a very busy person. I like to do things. So I guess maybe I thought some of that would slip away, but I'm still that, you know, industrious Margaret, you know. I'm be up, be doing. My grandmother used to say, busy hands are happy hands. And I believe that. So I guess I was surprised that I didn't calm down more. But on the other hand, I apply my energy to things that are less frustrating to me sometimes than business can be, you know, and more satisfying because they're more creative. But no, I don't think there's not been any giant surprises, not any giant ones. I was ready.
Okay.
I was ready.
So you mentioned you were working on something else. So what's up next? What's your next project?
I can't explain it exactly yet. My editor and I we haven't sort of talked about it a lot out loud yet, but the garden, which is a bit of a character in the current book, and then I shall have some peace there, the garden is going to be an even bigger character in the next book. Yeah. It's perfect for me in my life right now that that's the case, and that I have this good-sized audience of people who would like to read more about my relationship with the garden. So that's as best as I can say right now until I really have it. Like I said, for me, I don't really, until it comes out, I don't write stuff down, and I can't really necessarily describe it. So it's brewing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the garden's going to be front and center in the next book.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you have two local events coming up. You have two readings.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do. Actually, tomorrow, which is the 12th of March, in the evening at 7:30 at Oblong Books in Millerton, I'm going to do like a reading and a conversation. I love these bookstore events because it's really a chance to kind of, I'll read a little bit, that people talk and they come with questions. And each one is so different depending on the group. And then a week from Saturday, the 19th in Copaic, New York, I'm doing a full-on garden lecture to benefit the Friends of Taconic State Park. My house is technically like adjacent to the park, and there's a friends group, and so I'm doing a garden lecture, and that'll really be fun because the slides are great. So that's the 19th, and I have all my events on my book blog, all the links and stuff on my book site, so it's awaytogarden.com/book, and there's a tab up at the top that just says events, and it's pretty easy, and it can tell you how to get in touch about all of them.
Okay. And your lecture on the 19th, it's at Copaic Grange, right, in Copaic Falls.
It is. I'm so excited about that. Have you ever been in the Grange?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's a historic old Grange building. When I first lived up here, when I was a weekender, years ago, we used to vote there. That was where they had the elections and so forth. So I used to go cast my ballots there. And I hadn't been in it in years, and it's been renovated as a theater by a local theater group. And so they volunteer. They are donating it so that we can do this fundraiser for the Friends of the Park.
Great.
Yeah.
You know, I've never actually been in Copaic Falls either. I'll have to come and see your garden, Margaret.
Yeah, you can call it Cupcake Falls, as I do. So
oh,
I think
cupcake,
of it as Cupcake
okay.
Falls.
Okay.
But yes, you would be welcome. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us
here
today.
I'm so glad to reconnect, as I said.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's stay in touch. But and your blog, once again, is awaytogarden.com, and the book is And I Shall Find Some Peace There.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.